Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining the Behind Company Lines podcast. Today we have Rick Porter, CEO and founder of Discover. Discover is a groundbreaking decentralized social platform built entirely on the internet computer, ICP. It is a new kind of social network that presents the potential of a different future. Rick, thank you so much for joining the show. I'm really excited to dive into your product. Like I mentioned to you, I already signed up, start to use it a little bit, and I'm excited to not only learn more about you and the conception behind the idea, but where you envision it going forward. But before we jump in, would love to know, what were you doing before you started Discover?
Well, okay, first of all, thanks for having me. I'm really excited about this. I'm always excited to talk about Discover.
Yeah.
But, you know, before Discover, I was actually at Google. I was just working in within their GGN, their Google Global Network, and a lot of fun, really interesting projects, hard problems to solve.
Yeah.
But every time I got home at night, I was just like, I got to touch more code.
Yeah.
It's just, you start moving on code and you start building stuff and things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And remind me, your background is in engineering, in development.
Yeah. Right? I've been a software engineer for 15, 20 years at this point, worked for a couple of companies.
Yeah.
So I've always pushing something forward, and I've been an entrepreneur many times over. So Google and BCG, it was a previous company I worked with, were very much my most corporate positions.
Yeah. What was the difference between, other than the obvious, but what was the difference between working within the startup space, then going to a more structured kind of corporation, and obviously you transition now back to Discover, which we'll jump into. But yeah, what was that experience like going from kind of startup and then into corporate? What did you learn in that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing that came to mind was actually the mystery. But, you know, in your corporate environment, it succeeds or fails. You know, you have a very data-driven analysis that happens and a postmortem, and also structure, like speed, right? Like how fast you can move in a startup. Something's wrong. You have a feature idea. You can do it, you know, 8 hours. It can be in production and users can be using it. You know, in a corporate environment, you may like wait for the sprint to be ready. You may have to be on a schedule. It may not be released for a month or two. And then your build, measure, learn process is much shorter in a startup. But that's the thing. It's that mystery. Like you really don't know what will happen because you just don't have everything you might have in a highly structured environment.
Yeah. What are some of the key successes or I guess strategies for success that you saw and that I'm sure you're implementing now in Discover either through the startup experience or through the corporate experience?
Yeah, you know, when to level ramp up process, right? You know, like I think Discover has gone through like almost every stage. Well, hopefully not every stage, more to go. But like, you know, it's like that hacker mentality. It's like you don't even have a Trello board. You have nothing. You maybe have a note, a Google Doc that has like six lines in it. And they're really like abstract and mysterious words about what you're actually doing. And then you just start pushing code, testing with the user. Because it's like you want to get on that treadmill with the user of like, what are you doing? What's wrong? What problems are you facing? What do you need? Right? Mm-hmm. How do you actually facilitate the user experience? Mm-hmm. And it's just, you go through the transitions. Eventually you get to a Trello board or you get to a Notion and then you start stuffing to Jira and start tracking that.
Yeah.
I think we're at the very much at the mid Jira stage right now. But like, there's so many more, like how many project boards are you going to have? What are your PDRs going to look like and things like that?
Yeah, no, I'm amazed. Yeah. No, it's amazing how they go through that kind of prescriptive transition throughout the process. And from a lot of founders, and I'm not sure if you agree with this, but it goes within the customer journey, learning more about your customer, what they need, what they're using in your product, what they're not using. Has that been the similar experience with not only, I guess, with Discover now in terms of iterating and you know, and the evolution of it?
Yeah, you know, there's actually one caveat to all that. It's like we're pure Web3.
Yeah.
So all the data user tracking tools really don't work on our platform. So like even if we run GA, we have a user count, but like really extracting detailed information about what they're doing is like kind of against the ethos and a little bit against our principle. So it's like we're working with... We had a decentralized GA built through another team that we actually use. So we're learning as much as fast as they can develop products and stats to teach us what we're doing.
Yeah.
But honestly, just it's a startup, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to be talking to the user like every moment of every single day. You've got to be listening to him and talking to him.
Yeah. No, that's it definitely seems like that's the way forward in terms of whether identifying ways to build new products or features or continue on what's already working. What inspired you to build Discover? And you know, you were working in these different environments. It sounds like you were touching code, you know, when you head home, even when you clocked off, and continued working on different ideas. Was this always the idea that you're working on, or what was the particular inspiration for this product?
Yeah, you know, I've been developing decentralized technology now for almost 6 years, and that's what I've really focused on. Started off building a diamond traceability app for De Beers, and only a subset of things really end up on chain historically when working with Ethereum or other types of decentralized protocols. So an example is like, I want to store all this data, but I want it to be decentralized. Well, it's so expensive to store all that data. So you end up storing just a small hash on chain. And eventually you only start putting that hash on there every so often because the cost of actually writing that hash to chain. And so when Definity started building the internet computer, there's always been this vision of, we can put the whole thing on chain. So I was sitting there like, well, I want to build something for this. And I want to see, what is the feasibility of this? And so as soon as we got something up, or I got something up on the chain, it was an example of like, wow, this could actually work. And at the time it was the pandemic, right? And I was really lacking community. I was really lacking like communication, like diving into problems with people. And so Discover was really for me a place, a community that was being built. And so people that I could talk to, and it felt like I had that capability with Discover. So it's just like them wanting to use the platform and wanting to communicate with me and actually build out this platform, just continued to try features. And it wasn't like, hey, we're going to go change the world, let's build a decentralized social network. It was like, does this actually work? Is this actually possible? And through that, through learning of through the users, through talking to them, it was just fuel to the fire for me. You know, it was just, wow, there's people out there who are talking. And I'll always remember the first comment that I have no idea who they are, where they are at this point in time. But I remember that first hello world and me hello world backing to them.
Yeah.
And then they're like, it works. Thumbs up. And I'm like, yeah, this works.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, and then everything forward has been like, okay, what is the problem that we're solving? What is the problem that the user is facing? How do we resolve that?
Yeah.
And that's just how Discover got built. It's just in the process of working with the user and building something functional for them.
Yeah. What has been, since you've been building in tech in Web3 decentralized technology for over the past 6 years, how has the evolution looked, and where are we in terms of its kind of overall adaptability to whether it's dApps, DeFi, DeSoc is what they're calling it, and all these other kind of subsidiary technologies that come about with decentralized technology? How's the evolution been from your perspective on building it, and where do you think its capability is in terms of, you know, the adaptability kind of widespread?
Yeah, that's a good question. It really started off with like Bitcoin, right? And we could securely and safely and cryptographically transfer value between two addresses. People started asking more questions, like maybe there's more complex data associated with this data. There's some sort of data structure. And, you know, thus things like Ethereum were created, and people could start running minimal applications on top of these protocols. So the question, of course, was people who started building on Ethereum sort of like started constructing larger applications. And it came to the point where it's like, well, maybe this application is too large for an Ethereum, for the EVM, but maybe not for something else.
Yeah.
So you started seeing more corporate protocols born to try to facilitate this. And you had like was created, which wasn't very corporate, but the idea was is you could like build larger scale applications on chain. And, you know, through the ICP and Dominic Williams, they were able to see this very early on and actually come up with a way that you could actually run an entire application on chain, like all your business logic on chain, which is a huge paradigm shift from where everything started, but it's like natural progression. So taking this progression, we're just going to continue to see larger and quicker applications built on chain, where you can have like full multi-game servers. You know, you're going to have like full, all your streaming services are coming from chain, like, you know, all these types of analytic tools and data processing and search engines. So it's like, what type of chain would be needed? What type of protocol would be needed to actually facilitate these types of applications? And this is why I'm on the internet computer. I feel like it is on the bleeding edge, and it has a lot further way to go before it reaches that ceiling of, okay, this is the largest application that can be built.
Yeah.
And Discover's far from that, right? Which is really interesting. So that means from a Discover perspective, Like, we have so much further to go from how, what type of features and products can we actually keep on chain?
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I love the truth that kind of comes with the, you know, decentralized products. I was talking to another founder and he had built a way to, for, you know, research institutions and corporate institutions, but as well as individuals, get loans and build credit scores on chain. And this idea of, you know, understanding where your data is coming from and the history of the usability of that product, influencing the way you are productively using that or gaining more access is incredible to see and how it's continued to grow. So it's amazing to see how the technology is becoming more and more, or I guess the barriers are becoming lesser and you have more accessibility overall. What problems is Discover solving? You talked about, you know, you said hello world and from that conception and that idea and that the fact that it works, now you're looking to solve more problems for your user. What kind of problems are you looking to solve?
Yeah, you know, at this point in time, we're a completely decentralized social platform running on the internet computer, as we were saying. We have like NFT verified profile photos. We have the ability to tip and gift NFTs. We have the ability to gate and create communities and then gate those communities by NFT ownership, even gate them by traits. So full role-based access control. We're starting to explore governance as our next big one is like, how do you actually govern these communities, right? What type of rules and tools do you need in place? And there's a lot of knowledge out there, especially within how DAOs are run right now. So it's like, how do we take that, those type of mechanisms and create them in a way that's palatable to a Discover user and palatable to somebody who's actually building a decentralized community?
Yeah.
And so like at tokenomics, how do we actually progress through these types of rules so we can actually, you know, further finance the platform? But I think really governance is highly focused right now.
Yeah. What? Why does, I guess, you know, for me, I see the idea and maybe I would love to hear it from your perspective. Why does something like social and social interaction, social networking need to be on Web3 and go Web3?
Yeah, it's really about your digital ownership, right? Like, do you own the digital content that you upload to Facebook and Instagram? No, I think you even sign it away. Or one of their terms of services when you actually upload it. But like, it's not like terrible. I mean, it's gotten this far and it's proven out how people want to communicate. And I think just the progression is that we want to shift the ownership from the companies to yourself. Like, you should own your own digital footprint. And that's one thing that Discover really wants to get right is like, how do we make sure you own your digital footprint on the platform and that you have control over it? And if there's some sort of monetization in place because of the activities that have happened on the platform, what percent of that are you getting? What slice of that pie? And you have a right to things because you're creating this platform along with all the other users.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I love that perspective. And it kind of leads into my next question. How is the community, or how are products, I guess, and especially with Discover, being influenced by the community that they're cultivating?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question. So the community drives Discover. It's like, there's no doubt in my mind, you know, it's really about monitoring things and being like, okay, what are they trying to do? What are they trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
Reaching out to them. And, you know, the gating is one of those. It's like, hey, I have my community, but like, can you restrict it so people with this NFT can gate it? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that's a one-off. Let's try it. You know, and as soon as we put it up and put it in place, it's like, whoa, this is amazing. Let's scale this. And I think we're at like 48 right now. And we have self-gating tools coming out that'll hopefully exponentially increase that so the users can do it like just through a couple clicks of buttons. But, and like tipping, you know, someone on the platform is like, hey, I have this new token I'm launching, but how do I give it out to users? It's like on my own free will. Like, I just want to have it and just like start dishing it out. So we did a little bit of research and we're like, oh man, this is, if we do this, connect these three dots, the user can click a button and just give away some of these tokens. And now tipping has turned into many, many tokens. I don't know, I think that's by the end of the year, it's probably going to be a couple dozen, who knows?
Yeah.
And there's this perpetually happens though. Like, I have a problem, but I need it fixed. We're listening to the problem. What are you trying to do with it? Okay, how would you like this solution? How do you like that solution? And presenting that optionality to the users has, we found, takes us down paths that we couldn't envision, right? So mm-hmm. It's like, it's not always up to us to solve the problem. The users are solving problems with us.
Mm-hmm. That I love the progression of the way you're interacting with users and the ability you offer them to create certain, and it seems like it's also beneficial for Discover to create these different communities. A question that popped up as I was looking into Discover and knowing kind of the social climate within, you know, these other platforms is the question around, you know, a malicious user or what the consensus feels as a malicious user. How is Web3 and decentralized technology going to kind of combat individuals or monitor or I guess inactivate end users that are from the consensus, maybe not pushing out content that is productive or maybe even harmful? I'm sure you're in the news with different, you know, social figures,
oh, yeah,
you know, speaking out and being, you know, kind of banned from certain areas. And there's a lot of divide. My philosophy, I don't know if it's popular, but if the consensus is not with it, then, you know, we all don't want to hear it. But how does Web3, because of its decentralized nature, combat or address individuals of that nature? Have you thought about that? And if you have, what are your thoughts about the technology and how it interacts?
Yeah, you know, high level for Discover, you know, there's no like root community on Discover.
Yeah.
It's all sub-communities. So by just joining a sub-community, you're abiding by the rules of that sub-community or of that community itself. And anyone can create a community. So if bad actor is coming into communities, those communities can remove that user because that's their community. They can do what they want with it, right? Yeah. But if a bad actor creates a community that is intended to harm or break some sort of rules, so we have global rules on the platform. And they're very standard, you know, there's like no doxing, you know, no illegal content, things like that. And then we can come to a quick vote to remove that community and potentially permanently ban that user.
Yeah.
But the idea there is like, that should be a very extreme situation. On a micro scale, though, each community can decide who can post and not post in their own community because it's, you know, theirs.
Yeah, yeah. I love that sense of ownership, especially as, you know, communities self-regulate naturally, you know, and kind of human nature-wise, we're all beings that like to group in certain, you know, whether it's based on a similar idea or similar goal or what have you. And that self-policing or self-regulation, I think, is something that has been taken away from more centralized platforms. And so it's awesome to see Discover kind of allowing people the capability to, you know, regulate their own communities and foster, you know, or and create their message that they feel is, you know, in essence, either from what they conceived it as or that it's evolving to. Tell me a little bit about the traction. You talked about these different technologies, these sub-communities that you're building, these gated communities that are really, you know, creating, you know, and compounding on themselves. Tell us a little bit about the traction, the users, how many users are on the platform? What do you intend to grow to? What do you expect? Yeah, we'd love to hear about some of the progress that Discover is seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're at 130,000 users at this point in time. We grew maybe 30% in August alone. You know, September, the numbers are not in yet, but it's going to be another big growth period for us. And, you know, the biggest use cases are people wanting to build communities and drive decisions in those communities, like through polling or NFT gating and tipping and things like that. You know, it's becoming a launch pad, and it's always kind of been where people are like, hey, I have a new NFT project I'm about to launch. First thing I want to do is build up a community around it and start whitelisting those users for airdrops, because it's a form of identity. By joining this community, by participating in this community in a positive manner, people are able to select them and whitelist them. So the other part of that too is like, because you don't like Discover by the, when you sign up, you already have an address, and this address acts like a wallet and can already see fungible tokens and non-fungible tokens. So users, once they whitelist them, can drop them directly to the user on Discover by just grabbing their wallet address on Discover and sending it right to it. So it's like we've kind of solved that typical problem that you might face for the onboarding for Web3.
Yeah.
And so that's where we're seeing a lot of growth. It's people who are like learning about the Web3 process
yeah.
and getting evangelized through actually interacting with the platform and receiving fungibles or non-fungibles, being able to actually go get to sell them, to trade them, to keep them, you know, to do all sorts of things with them.
Yeah. How does a user best utilize Discover's platform?
Yeah. You know, it's by, from our perspective, you know, if you want to extract the most amount of value out of your experience on Discover, it's about really submitting valuable content. It's really about engaging with the community, and it's really about learning about what the community wants to get built.
You know, what kind of community can you manage? What kind of community can you, pre-existing community, can you actually join to be a moderator on, right? It's really about getting that engagement for those power users.
But like a typical user who's browsing the platform, you know, just submitting content, like taking place in discussions, you know, voting on content, help us curate these feeds, help us know what is actually valuable content on the platform. Because at the end of the day, the more type of these users who want to come on the platform and engage, we'll just continue to grow a quality user base on the platform itself.
Yeah, no, that's incredible and super helpful advice, especially for audience members who want to join the platform and myself selfishly for how to interact with it. But in a kind of a follow-up question to that is, how do you view community? Just like, I don't know if this is more of a philosophical question, but community has been kind of, I don't want to say disrupting, but becoming kind of parallel with building products now with a lot of startups and companies. It's almost like if you're not building and thinking about community at the same time, then you're a step behind. But what is it to you in your eyes of like, why is community so important? And what do you view community as, I guess, you know, in how it functions as an organism within, you know, a product's life cycle and growth?
Yeah, you know, we're a social platform. Our biggest stakeholder is the users themselves. So it's really about, you know, facilitating the needs of the stakeholders, which is the users. And it's like, if you just don't have that direct line of communication to them and have them comfortable to be able to reach out and tell you about something on the platform, you're just not going to know. I mean, like, I would say 30, 40% of our bugs come in through Twitter DMs or Telegram DMs, or just like random emails or posts on the site. Like people who may not feel comfortable about posting publicly on the, or just by reaching out, or vice versa, people who feel really comfortable and they're posting it and having a discussion.
Yeah.
And I think the discussion is the most useful, because it's like, it brings other users' ideas and figures out how to actually solve those problems. Mm. But I think when they do reach out, you know, it's like thanking them and really engaging them and understanding what other problems they're trying to face, because that's your first line of defense. A lot of times is like, hey, what's actually wrong with the platform? If I'm not on it, like if I'm not on every single page, on every single component, on every single browser, right? And we're a small startup. So it's like, you know, like there's only so many automation tools that we can run. And if you're a small startup, there's only so many points of your process you'll have through actually your deployment and like your, how do you do regression testing and all these things?
Yeah.
So like open that line and really, really care about what the user really wants and always thank them for that, because it's for them to reach out. That's like, that's work, you know? So that must be, they really care about that platform.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the biggest risks that Discover faces today?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest is always going to be identity, you know, and at what level of identity is appropriate. And right now we turn that over to the portals, or which are our communities. And these communities decide what type of identity the user needs. Do they need a verified phone number? You know, do they have to have specific types of NFTs to join? Right? Do they have to create an introductory thread and get accepted? But like, as decentralized social grows, like how do you avoid the pitfalls of Web 2 and somehow create a more diverse community, but also some with some form of identity? And like, I have a lot of theories on identity. And the biggest one is we all are all multiple people online. So it's like, there can't be just one identity that represents me. And I feel like I wouldn't be as interesting a person, and none of us would be, if one identity truly represented us. And I want to figure out a way, how do we let people be themselves while still maintaining a well-formed platform?
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I love the piece on identity, especially because I think we've learned, you know, in many iterations of psychology and research, where people have a mask or a social mask, and there's different aspects to themselves that function, you know, in different situations as, you know, a form of adaptation and just human behavior and the way, and it's not, you know, creating any barrier to that that's successful. It's creating the opportunity to allow those different personalities or personas, what have you, behaviors, act productively, positively in these different situations. So I love that theory. And if everything goes well with Discover, what's the long-term vision for the company?
Yeah, for Discover, you know, it's really about getting that global reach, looking for that mass adoption, creating a platform that could truly take two user and onboard them into Web3. allow them to build a fully decentralized and autonomous community on Discover and allow them to manage that community through their governance tools and create a way that they can actually monetize themselves and those communities through these tools, right? So if you're a traditional community builder or you're a traditional influencer and you're looking to monetize your own digital footprint while still maintaining ownership and proof of ownership of your digital footprint, Discover will be the right platform for you. And I think if we're smart about this, right, and we take the powerful elements of Web3 and some of the traditional elements of Web2 and figure out how to merge them together in a decentralized social platform, we'll have a new type of user that can actually monetize themselves and have some sort of proofs behind these monetizations.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I love not only the vision that conceived the company and the idea, but where it's heading to and how it's allowing people to, you know, and ideally, you know, adopt Web3 from Web2 in a very, I guess, authentic way where, you know, it exists as a social capacity and not have to be so tied to finance or tied to some type of application. It ties into kind of an emotion that we all feel, which is, you know, wanting and longing for a sense of community. So really excited to see where the product goes and grows. And I always like to ask this question because I get different answers from different founders. And it's selfishly a way for me to learn more and do more research, but for also my audience as well to get some more information. But what books or people have influenced you the most?
Oh, wow. Let's see here. Like, I've always been a big sci-fi fan. I'm a huge anime fan too.
Yeah.
So like, it's like, I'm spending a lot of time watching sci-fi anime and Steins Gate and like really like living that dream of like, what an alternative universe or an alternative future could be like, you know? And it's like really watching these, to me, great works and experiencing them and like kind of like taking these abstract ideas and figuring out, ooh, how can we fit this into Discover?
Right.
Like, this is such an interesting concept. You know, and it's really like, for me, it's been highly focused. Like, what are the right elements that I can extract from Web2 and Web3 and like reading as many papers as I can to actually try to put those pieces together.
I love that. What's the anime of choice or what's the one that's most interesting right now?
Man, Steins Gate's always been my favorite.
Yeah.
One of my only favorites. Yeah. There's an actually, I'd have to think about it, but there's this actually one I watched recently, Psychopaths.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is like it's in like a weird blockchain universe where like everyone's mind or all these like collective minds are driving identity and like determining people's, you know, anger levels, I guess, through some sort of decentralized network of minds.
Spooky. I'm a huge anime fan too. And I grew up watching like Case Closed, you know, when Sword Art Online came and obviously I'm a huge Naruto fan. I think most are. And if you're not, I'm curious if you're more of a Bleach fan or where you stand there. But thank you so much for, you know, giving us your background, your experience, walking us through the evolution of Discover and where it's going and how technology is really allowing us the opportunity to have that ownership, and companies like Discover is allowing it kind of a location for us to congregate and share ideas and share that. Last little bit, where can we find you? Where can we support you? Give us your plug, your LinkedIn, your websites, your Twitters. Where can we support the vision of Discover?
Yeah, check out discover.one, DSCVR.one. Show up, check out the site, sign up, create a post, say you heard about this podcast, and we'll see what happens.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rick, for being on the show. I'm really excited to see where Discover goes and to play around more with the platform. Hope you enjoyed yourself. But again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. No, thank you so much for having me. Great questions. You're great interviewers. So this was awesome.